there's a few developments that are coming out that are really just going to, you know, put a gain factor on this stuff and just hit a home run with it. One of them is something called Auto Stereo. Auto Stereo is what the new Nintendo 3DS game system has, which basically gives you this amazing 3D image, and you don't need to wear any glasses. So Jaron Lanier, one of our big inspirations for this book, he's the inventor of he coined the term virtual reality, and he really built some of the first systems about 30 years ago. Jaron says VR is never going to be important if somebody's got to wear stuff on his head and if it can't fit on a desk. So you can't have to go into your dedicated room for virtual reality to be big, to be mainstream. And we're finally now at the point with this Auto Stereo stuff that you can see VR without wearing glasses.
Will we have to put on suits, like special sensory suits, for the changes that are coming in virtual reality so that we would feel, if our avatar was walking down a gravel path, we would feel the gravel under our feet?
Ian, 5 years ago, this is Jeremy here, I would have said, yes, absolutely, you're going to need to wear something to get this immersive perceptual experience. But the changes in technology in just in the last year have been stunning. So one component of virtual reality is what we call tracking, which is measuring your behavior. So if you want to be able to walk in a virtual world, you've got to measure that the legs are moving. And Microsoft Kinect has developed this beautiful computer vision algorithm that now makes it so a simple camera, an infrared camera, can track all of your movements without you having to wear any suit or any marker. We're building a new lab at Stanford, a really state-of-the-art, cutting-edge virtual reality experience. And one of the things that we're going to have, so you mentioned feeling gravel under your feet, the floor shakes. So as you are walking in this virtual world, we've got a floor that actually makes you feel as if there's an earthquake, or as if you can feel a gravel crunch, or feel another person's footsteps. But in order for virtual reality to be compelling, you don't want to have to step into this really uncomfortable, bulky, crazy suit that you've seen in all the science fiction movies. You want to be able to just step in and out of it and really see it at your desk.
Okay, so that's going back to what we were talking about before the bottom of the hour. What you said is what we would need at our desk would be a small, accessible unit, nothing bulky. And then you had a kind of a cliffhanger there, and I had to stop you because we were going up to the break. Did we work back to where you were there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the three big whammies in terms of really making this technology now be everywhere. One is the 3D displays of Auto Stereo. So you don't need glasses to see an amazing 3D hologram with these Auto Stereo, they're called lenticular displays. The second is what I just said about tracking. So a simple camera can capture all of your movements to produce an avatar. And the third one that we're seeing is advances in artificial intelligence, which has been the holy grail for some time for people in this industry. But just recently, as you well know, the IBM team at Watson from Yorktown Heights produced a computer program that can actually defeat humans in Jeopardy. And that's going to help in building and assimilating these environments as well. So all of a sudden, you can have a stereo image without wearing anything on your face. You're at your desk, you can have all of your emotions tracked so your avatar can exhibit all the behaviors that you can, and you can increase the realism of this stuff by putting artificial intelligence layers there. And it's really a special, special time for us to be studying this stuff. So, Jim, tell us a little bit about the history of what we've been doing for the last 20 years with this technology.
Yes, we've been doing an awful lot about this. We started out working in a lab, and we've, you know, as scientists and our colleagues around the country and around the world, you know, have been a little bit ahead of the game, but it's required some of this clunkier technology, which at the time it was used never seemed so clunky to begin with because of the amazing effects that it brought with it. In terms of the visual technology, these lenticular displays are fabulous, as Jeremy has described already, to be able to look at an image that is between you and the monitor or the screen will really help. But you don't want to have to take that screen around either. And so people have talked about these displays simply becoming a pair of contact lenses powered by body heat. So everything's going to get a little bit more portable, you know, over time. But cumulatively over time, it's going to be hardly noticeable, that is the technology. It's going to be analogous to what I said earlier about listening to a voice. You won't even be thinking, well, that's really just a digitized rendering of what I'm looking at. It'll seem just like the voice. We have to remind ourselves is a digitized rendering of our audio.
That's a fair point. Now, where would the money be coming from this? You mentioned Microsoft, and I know that there's a lot of investment that's going on at some level from the gaming industry, but most of the great advances in our technology have come from either the military or from a profit-focused business model where the enormous costs of research and development were outweighed later on by the potential in the mass market. So where is the money coming from to create all of these new products and these new applications for virtual reality?
A few areas. So as you said, the military has been fueling virtual reality research for decades and decades. The gaming industry is really pushing the computer graphics side of it. And really working on making characters look real. But I think what's really going to push it, and this is you mentioned the New York Times article that really touched upon this, think about physical travel. Think about a business trip, the amount of time you waste going to the airport, driving to the airport, flying. Think about the toll it takes on your body. All of this for probably just a 2 or 3 hour meeting, you're wiping away all this time. Think about the amount of fuel and energy that's wasted for physical travel. What if you could have these business meetings and really feel like you're there? Have a virtual presence that's just as compelling as your physical presence could ever be, if not more so. And not have to do all this travel. And one of the really big financial motivators is going to be saving time, energy, and not to mention physical travel causes of death. You know, car crashes are a really horrible thing, and one of the biggest causes of death in our country. And what if we could just avoid that and not have to travel physically in order to have a physical presence or a compelling virtual presence at a meeting?
So these business applications are helping to fund some of the development. What's the military's interest in having what, virtual soldiers? I understand the drone thing, but where does a virtual spy? I mean, where does that come in to the military's interest?
We could really talk for 2 hours just on all the different applications that the military uses virtual reality for. One of the first ones historically has been training. So if I'm going to put you in a very difficult, dangerous situation, there's a lot of ways you can train for this. You can role play, you can practice, but none of it's ever going to feel like you're in combat. And the military has a very long history of using these realistic 3D simulations as a way of putting someone in the battlefield to get them, in the virtual battlefield to get them some training, et cetera. There's a group at USC, actually, at the Institute of Creative Technologies that's actually built a virtual culture training simulator. So imagine that I was going to Iraq and I had to walk around into a crowded square and talk to a leader, a tribal leader there. There's a lot of cultural nuances. How do I look at someone? Am I allowed to touch them when I shake their hand? All these very difficult cultural translations that you just can't get from a book, that they've created these really neat simulations, these virtual trainings, to give someone a real feel for what it's like to be in another culture and to actually teach them the do's and the don'ts of various places.